I don't know if you've noticed, but in the, I don't know, past so many months, we've had quite a few scandals in this area with certain ministries, churches. I don't want to get into any details about that, but I'm sure most of you have probably seen all of that. At least four or five churches have been rocked pretty hard with certain scandals. And there was another one this week, you know, not a church, but a TV thing. So I think obviously God is exposing some things. And maybe it's embarrassing. I don't know. It doesn't embarrass me, but I'm glad to see it personally. Because I think what he's exposing is that these churches and ministries have just become big business. They're run more like, they're corporations more than they are corporate bodies, organisms. They're more organizations instead of organisms. You have to have some organization in your church, but nevertheless, if it starts becoming a business where profit and money start taking the lead in what you're interested in, well, you've missed it. That's where it goes really bad. And I think that's more or less, at least with some or most of these cases, that's the issue. Maybe not all of them. You know, so, I mean, or I guess actually another thing could be just celebrity. You know, I know at least in one of these cases, it just seems to be a case of somebody had become a celebrity pastor to such an extent that he actually wasn't even a pastor. He wasn't even a member of the church that was where the problem sprung up. And, you know, of course, it very often involves some kind of sexual infidelity. That's typical. So, or sometimes they have involved more than infidelity, just even sexual abuse of an underage person, which of course is extremely disturbing. And as much as disturbing as the actual crime is, and it is not only a sin, it's a crime, but is the lengths people go to cover it up. Which is an indication that what they're really interested in is the fame and the money, right? Anything at all costs, let's protect the reputation so that the money keeps coming in. And what I often see is when I read, you know, these stories, and then you start reading the comments, which is always a dangerous thing to do, is how many times, you know, let's say there's a case of Pastor A, you know, commits some egregious sin, really, whether it's adultery or abuse at some time in the past, or runs off with the money, you know, whatever. They're all bad, and they're all seriously bad. Not just, you know, I said a cuss word, but is you'll see these comments of, well, you know, he's just, you know, he's just human, and, you know, we should forgive, and all that. And or you'll see that the church itself will put the pastor through a 3-month rehabilitation, and then he's back in the pulpit preaching, shortly thereafter, when he might have, well, he might have like abused a young child or something. Or they may have covered up the abuse of a child, you know, by some parishioner. There's different ways it can manifest, but so not only is there the sin and then the cover-up and then it's finally exposed, which really does damage to the church or to the reputation of the Lord, you know, in the greater world. Because, you know, the greater world doesn't know, oh, well, they're a weird group in the first place, and so it doesn't really matter, or, you know, whatever, right? They just think it's all the same, right? So, and frankly, it's gotten to the point where there is no, like, group that this stuff has not affected. You know, it used to be, oh, the Catholics, man, the Catholics, they're, you know, those priests. And which turns out, just for FYI, that was like little over 1% of priests that did those things. So it just seems so much more widespread than, you know, because the news blows it up. And I'm not defending it at all. I'm just saying it wasn't as widespread as you thought, as you might think, based on the way it was covered in the news. But now it's reached into all, you know, they've actually kind of cleaned up their act. They figured out what to do and how to, not sweep it. They've dealt with it. They've actually, you know, to a large extent, put measures in place to prevent those kinds of things and all that. But now it's sweeping through the, you know, basic Protestant ranks. You know, it doesn't matter if you're Anglican or Baptist or whatever. It may not be the exact same sin, but it's equal in egregiousness. So, what it kind of tells, what I get from that is that it's not one particular group that's so much worse than any other particular group because of their theology, let's say. It's more, we've got a generation or two of, like, say, people my age that grew up in the midst of the quote-unquote sexual revolution, and they've just been pummeled their whole lives, really, with all this stuff in the greater world, and it's affected them, and they've never actually dealt with it, right? It's not a problem for somebody to commit a sin, even those sins, and be forgiven. As we've just been talking about, God is great in mercy. God is, you cannot out-sin God's grace, right? For every sin you commit, He's got another act of grace to give you, an act of mercy to bestow upon you. It's not a matter of that. Yes, God is supremely merciful. The issue is immaturity and people stepping into positions of leadership before they're ready to. We have totally lost, I shouldn't say totally, we have largely lost any kind of sort of judgment system or accountability or whatever to disciple people and observe them, leaders, potential leaders, over time to make sure they're really ready for that task. Right? Jim didn't do that. Jim did do that, very much so. Sort of frustratingly slow a lot of times, right? Everybody's like, when are we going to have elders and all that sort of thing? Well, they're not ready yet. Exactly. Exactly. That was very wise. Very wise. because you get in a leader who is still besieged with that stuff and unable to resist it, those temptations, that it causes great harm, right? It causes harm to that congregation. It causes harm to the greater reputation of the church and the Lord, etc. It's not good. The early church was very good about that sort of thing. Very strong about it. And if you were, you know, if you were somebody who turned over scriptures to the Romans, you know, because they threatened to martyr you, or you turned in your neighbor, or you denied the Lord, you know, and made a sacrifice to a pagan god, which was what, that's how they would test you. Okay, because to the Romans, the Christians were atheists, okay? Because they did not believe the whole pantheon of gods. They only believed in their one god, even above Caesar. And so the way to get them to capitulate was to say, you must make a sacrifice to whoever, you know, Caesar whoever, or Jupiter, or whatever god they picked. And there were those people who did that. There were people, Christians, who did that. They gave in and made the sacrifice, or they handed over the scriptures, which was a super precious commodity, right? There were not many scriptures available, and to hand them over to the Romans was serious, because the Romans were just going to destroy them. Anyway, there was a big controversy after that left off, after that stopped, and these people wanted back in the church. And there was a big controversy about it. You know, there were the hardliners that said, no way, you're lost forever. You denied Christ, and you know what he said, if you deny me before men, I'll deny you before the Father. So you're out of here. There was another group that said, no, just let them back in. God's all merciful. Just come on in. And there was a big debate about that. And what they ended up settling on was, yes, God is merciful. We will let you back in, but there has to be a probation period where before you can take the Eucharist, because that was the whole deal about the early church, was taking the Eucharist, okay? Not really anything else. Before you can come to the Lord's table, in other words, you're excommunicated, you're currently excommunicated, in order you to come back and be able to take from the Lord's table, you have to go through a testing period. And in some places it was months, in some places it was years. It just depended. I actually think that's a pretty wise solution. That is a pretty wise solution. And so, because, yes, God is merciful. Absolutely, God is merciful. None of us could make it if God wasn't merciful. But if you've transgressed in that sort of serious way, it's more than just being able to say, well, I'm sorry. You know, some sins do reach deep into a person's soul. And they're not just purged by saying, I'm sorry. Okay? If you have, and I really do not want to be sensationalistic or morbid or lurid, that's the word I'm looking for. But it's become a thing in the last so many years. If you have like abused a child, that's not something that just goes away because you say, I'm sorry. That drive in a person, or if they're homosexual, or if they're even a philanderer. That's not something that just immediately ceases because you say, oh, I'm sorry, I won't do it again. Or you're a wife beater. Those are deep. Well, whatever, any human, any person, if they're not in the church, church, in church, leader, doesn't matter. Generally, right now, I'm just saying. Well, okay, yeah, I've kind of gone back and forth. With regard to if you have certain sins, that would just apply to anybody. In church, out of church, leader, not leader, right? I mean, if you just have certain things, psychologically, if you want to use that term, that's something kind of deep in you, and it doesn't usually, barring a miracle, of course God can do a miracle, but barring a miracle, that's going to be something that's going to take time to overcome. All right? Am I saying something that's, you know, that doesn't jive with your thoughts? Because to me, if a man is a serial adulterer, let's say, that means he's got a clinker in his thinker, okay? He's got something down in his heart that is more than just, oh, I looked too long at a swimsuit calendar. You know what I'm saying? Am I being a little too real here? But or if he's, you know, God forbid, if he's an abuser, that's a seriously off psyche. Or any other perversion, frankly. I hate talking about this, but, you know, it's out there. So, that's why I think that whole deal about let's do a period of time where you can be shepherded and counseled and, those things with leaders who do not have that problem and can help you get through it over time. And then maybe you are ready to be some kind of a leader. So I'm taking a long way around to say, I just think a lot of these problems are men are put into positions of leadership simply because they've gone to seminary and studied some stuff and gotten a degree, and it has really nothing to do with their character. Nobody has spent any time to prove their character, right? They didn't go through any spiritual formation. For discipleship. The Baptist Seminary, wherever it is, that way, does not, at least they didn't used to. They may now, I don't know. They didn't used to do anything like that. Right? I think some seminaries have actually started some kind of a discipleship alongside the academics. That's good. That's a good deal. That's a good sign. So, I haven't even really got to what I'm supposed to talk about now, but I'm just saying there's a lot of naivete and unreality in what Christians think about sins, okay? It's like somehow the message has gone out that since God forgives every sin is equal. Every sin is not equal. The Bible does not say that every sin is equal. It's equal in a certain sense in that it does reveal that you're rebellious to God. That's true. But even Jesus said, woe to you, what? I think it was Bethsaida and Chorazin. If Sodom and Gomorrah had seen what you saw, they would have repented. but you didn't, and so you will receive a harsher judgment. Your sin is worse, in other words. So you're going to get a harsher judgment on Judgment Day. Yeah. You repent, just like you have been doing per your testimony. No. I'm sorry. I got to be really careful here. God, if you're repentant and you're calling out to God, there's no problem. You're absolutely forgiven. Right? His mercy, like I was saying ago, His grace is always greater than your sin. That's in Romans. Right? Romans 6? Right? Yeah, there will be a judgment. There will be a judgment. We will all be judged, right? We will all be judged. And it does say we will be judged on what you've done, not what you believed. So I'd like to, yeah, that's all right, go ahead. Yeah. Right. So, no, it's okay. So, any good thing we do, any good work we do, it's because God gave us grace to do it. Okay? We are not able to conjure up enough goodness to do anything good. We don't have it in us in and of ourselves. We have to have God's grace in order to do anything, quote unquote, good. A good work. Right? So, of course. Of course. Maybe. Yeah. You mean like exorcism? You mean like deliverance?
No, not exorcism. No, I mean, if you are not delivered from a sin, you will keep doing it.
I'm not sure what you mean by the word delivered, I guess.
Example being somebody that's into pornography. Mm-hmm. If they do not face that sin, mm-hmm.
confess it.
Forgiveness and then turn towards God for deliverance from that sin, they're going to keep on doing it.
Oh, yes. That's actually what I've been saying about it goes deep and it has to take. In most cases, not always, some people are, I think, sort of instantaneously delivered. But I think largely people, it takes time. Right? It takes time. They have to learn how to be filled with the Spirit, filled with the grace of God, so that they don't do certain things that they had done by habit previously. Growing in grace, right? It's called growing in grace. Or being transformed, 2 Corinthians 3, from grace to grace, or I forgot how it says it now. But anything good, and by good, it's not just necessarily a positive thing, but it's also not doing something evil. You know, whether it's a positive doing or a negative abstaining from doing something evil, that requires God's grace. Okay? We are not the sources of goodness, ever. Only God is good. And so it requires His strength through the Holy Spirit to accomplish anything good or to abstain from evil. And in fact, Romans 8 that Jeff recommended talks about that a lot. You know, if we put to death the deeds of the body by the Spirit, we shall live. Right? It's by the Spirit. Okay. So yeah, I need to be really clear about that. We're not doing anything good on our own. Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah, the root of all sin, no matter who's committing it, a non-Christian or a Christian leader, the root of any sin is just pride. It's that, no, I'm my own person. I'm not going to admit to that. I will not admit to, I didn't do that. No, I would never do that. That kind of mentality. That is the root of all these things, is pride. Every sin. Pardon? Yeah, because the root of all of that, if you trace it back enough, is going to come back to pride. It's kind of the original sin. Right? It is the original sin. I see that apple and it looks good for wisdom and I'll be like God and I'll be able to determine what's right and what's wrong. That's the original sin. Pride. So that's where we tend to get messed up, is I have a sin, I need to deal with it, but in order to deal with it, I need to come before God and confess it and own up to it and not make any excuses. Just totally own it. Right? That's where you make progress. Because that's where God will say, ah, finally, you're willing to admit it. Now I can deal with you. Now I can bestow mercy on you and grace, power, etc. Right? Okay. Some of those things may take coming before God many, many, many times. 1,000 times. 10,000 times. I did it again, God. I did it again. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Please forgive me. I completely confess it. I've said this so many times to God. I own it, God. I totally did it. I wanted to do it. I had no, you know, there's no excuse. None. I'm guilty. I had every intention of doing exactly what I did. Okay. Okay. Just think about that if your own child says that to you when they do something. Right? Isn't that better? Aren't you kind of like, yeah. That was awesome. Maybe you even punish them a little less. Right? It's when they say, it's hilarious to me when a little 2-year-old, 3-year-old will just lie straight to your face. You saw them do it. You know they did it. I didn't do that. I didn't do that. The dog did it. I mean, it comes out like that. And then later on, it gets more sophisticated. But, you know, I've got one child that will hold on to things, and it takes them forever to come back and admit that they were wrong. I've got another one who will, I mean, I shouldn't go into this. I've got another one who will, the first one will be sort of sweet and not argumentative, but still won't really admit until much later, if ever. Sometimes never, actually. And then I've got another one that will just scream and throw a huge fit, and then in half an hour coming back and with tail between legs and confessing. Well, I'd rather have the second, to be honest. I'd rather have the second case, because that's now it's dealt with and we can move on. Okay. This is completely going off in a tangent. I was, So, some sins are easily dealt with, other sins, not so much. They require a lot of patience and persistence and coming before God. This is why we come before God, actually, or one of the main reasons. Not the only reason. We should be coming before God daily and getting before Him and getting into praise and worship and learning from His Word and the Bible and being filled with the Spirit for that day. Just be filled with the Spirit for that day. Right? I just come before You, Lord. I need You today. I need my daily bread. Give us this day our daily bread. And, of course, probably, that's the one thing you don't want to do when you wake up. Unless you've been trained at it for a long time. The one thing you don't want to do is get before God and be silent for an hour. Right? So much to do. I've got so many things I got to get done today. I need to check the news to see what the latest Trump thing is. And I'm sure there's a YouTube video that I probably need to watch, and or a podcast I need to listen to, because, you know, I just only caught the first 30 minutes of that one. Yes, I need to catch up. I mean, we're really good at excuses. We're really good at excuses. I'm right there with you. I'm completely, you know, like that. But every morning, and for most people, morning is the best time. It's not a law, but it is usually the best time because it kind of sets the tone for the entire day. It's good to come before God and be quiet. And by quiet, I don't mean some sort of Eastern meditation thing, you know, where you try to blank out your mind or something. That's actually a problem. That's sort of occultic. But I just mean, well, there's a famous quote by Pascal, you know, that the whole world's problems are due to the fact that people cannot sit by themselves alone for an hour. That just sounds so off the wall at first, and then you kind of go, oh, because he was a Christian. I get it. I get it. So that wasn't a verbatim quote. I'm just paraphrasing. But anyway, where was I? I was something to do with leaders. Oh, yeah. Leaders, you know, the Bible says leaders are more harshly judged, right? In James, it says, not many of you should aspire to be leaders because you will be judged more harshly. Yeah, right. Right, and that's the problem. Modern day leaders have grown up in a system that, one, in the world, before they became Christians, they were just deluged with mass media temptations that the world had never seen before. Right? Nobody in history had had to deal with that much input all the time. And it's even worse nowadays. And also, the training system in place, the seminary training system, just doesn't even talk about that. Or it didn't until maybe recently, hopefully recently, they'd have. It's kind of like medical school. Medical school does not talk about nutrition. You would think these things that we ingest that feed our cells, which are the most fundamental aspects of health, would be studied intensely in medical school. And yet, they're hardly studied at all, if at all. It's kind of a parallel with seminary. All right. So, I am focusing kind of on leaders, really. That all these problems we're seeing are because of this faulty paradigm that we have. You know? In a lot of churches, it's not even a seminary thing. It's a, who do they elect to be pastors? Elders in a lot of churches? Usually it's the people with the most money. The people who are the most prosperous and successful. That's no prerequisite for being an elder. That is not in the list of things that an elder should be. How much money? Oh, the rich guy, let him, he's used to being a leader. Put him in a leadership position because he's a leader of business. That's perhaps the exact wrong person you want in there. Okay? Anyway. All right, so Matthew's, okay. So, I have very rarely, I'm like pretty much never watched myself on the replays of these things, but when I have, I notice I'm, my hands are all over the place. I didn't know I was Italian. But like I said, you read the comments when these stories break out, and so many people are like, well, we shouldn't judge brother so-and-so, even though, he abused this person, or he just covered up this, or he did that. I'm like, I think that's a little misplaced. And they're going to pull out, usually, Matthew 7:1, right? Matthew 7:1. I'm going to write the references down. Matthew 7:1, actually 1-5. Judge not, that you be not judged. For with what judgment you judge, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me remove the speck from your eye, and look, a plank is in your own eye? Hypocrite, first remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Well, most of the times when people pull out that verse, they kind of forget verses 2 through 5. Or maybe they use it, but still it's like, well, we're not to judge. We're all sinners. Yeah. Yeah. But yet, what? Well, before we go to the what, I'll pull out another one. 1 Corinthians 4. Three through five. All right, 1 Corinthians 4. Three through five. I am not, this is Paul speaking, I am not aware of anything against myself, but I am not thereby acquitted. It is the Lord who judges me. Yeah. Therefore, it is the Lord who judges me. Therefore, do not pronounce judgment before the time, before the Lord comes, who will bring to light the things now hidden in darkness and will disclose the purposes of the heart. Then each one will receive commendation from God. So notice, he's saying, I don't even judge myself. So here is, do not judge. Okay? Those two scriptures, let's say. Don't judge. I don't even judge myself. That doesn't mean I'm not guilty, but I'm waiting for the judgment day. Okay? But let's try John 7:24. Do not judge by appearances, but judge with right judgment. Well, wait a second, you just told me not to judge. Now you're telling me to judge. Isn't that a contradiction? Okay. What about James? 5:19 through what? 20. My brethren, if anyone among you wanders from the truth and someone brings him back, let him know that whoever brings back a sinner from the error of his way will save his soul from death and will cover a multitude of sins. Well, how do you know if somebody has wandered from the truth? You have to make a judgment. Right? You have to say, you're sinning. You're sinning, or you've got something wrong there that needs to be corrected. Now, or Ezekiel 3:18-19. If I say to the wicked, you shall surely die, and you give him no warning, nor speak to warn the wicked from his wicked way, that wicked man shall die in his iniquity, but his blood I will require at your hand. There's another one about confronting somebody about sin. So again, to recognize that, you have to make a judgment. And you have to make that judgment known to that person. We have Matthew 18 that talks about how to deal when somebody has, you know, offended you, and you take it, you go to get it with them first privately, and then you go before a couple of witnesses if the first one doesn't work, and if the second one doesn't work, then you go before the whole church and deal with it. So all of those involve judgments of somebody doing something not good. But I should throw in Galatians 6, 1 and 2. Hello? There we go. My friends, if anyone is detected in a transgression, you who have received the Spirit, some translations say you who are spiritual, should restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness. Take care that you yourselves are not tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. So, yeah, this is not, hey man, come with pitchforks and tar and pitch, right? This is, yeah, da-da-da-da. You get out of here, you sinner. Now, sometimes the Bible does say you have to excommunicate somebody. That's hard to do in today's world, because excommunicate them to what? Right? They'll just go down the street and find another church. So I'm not sure how practical that is nowadays. But the original intention of excommunication was they are part of a close-knit community, and by excommunicating, which really means you cannot share the Lord's table with us, that should create a sense of loss in that person, and so that they want to come back. The way churches have gotten, I'm not sure that has that impact anymore. But regardless, this one here, Galatians, tempers these over here. You know, if you're thinking, oh, now we need to just rush in with our self-righteousness and our superiority and say, you get out of here, you worthless, no good, dog-faced pony soldier. Remember who said that? Anyway. So there's a temperance that goes along with that. There's a humility, because you may end up doing the same thing, right? It's the one finger outward and three or four fingers coming back at you. So you cannot do this in some sort of self-righteous way. But so these verses here are, do judge. So obviously, to prevent a contradiction, these have to be talking about different types of judgments. Okay? So these here, category one, do not judge. It's talking about, don't set yourself up to be like a better person than whoever you're judging. You cannot judge their motives. You cannot judge their ultimate destination. You cannot judge whether they're Christian or not. You can't even judge, according to this one, yourself. Your ultimate destiny. What God will end up deciding about you. So that's where you have to draw a line about not judging. Okay? I mean, I grew up a diehard Beatles fan. All right? To me, they are the no competition, the best pop rock group ever. Even still. You know? I had to throw away all my Beatle records because I worshiped them too much. I've actually done it twice because I rebought them. And I did it again. Okay? But that's what I cut my teeth on. That's what I grew up listening to. That's what I grew up playing, copying, everything. I know every Beatles song. I know every lyric, blah, blah, blah. Okay? And I hope, you know, there was a time, believe it or not, where John Lennon, the most anti-Christian, probably, of the four Beatles, there was a time where he actually got down on his knees and was watching the 700 Club and got down on his knees and put his hands on the TV because Pat Robertson said, place your hands on the TV, and he prayed with Pat Robertson. And then his wife castigated him for it and talked him into not doing any of that sort of thing anymore. Now, you would never know that if you didn't sort of read those, you know, deeper biographical details, right? But I don't know. What does that mean? Is there some possibility that John Lennon could be actually saved? I don't know. He sure didn't live like it. He was really antagonistic towards Christianity. Okay? So I don't know. I don't know. But that's not for me to judge. I can't judge that. There's no way I know what was inside his heart and what transacted between him and God. Same with, you know, same with the other ones, the other three. But here we have the second category. There are instances you have to judge. And it's behavioral. You're judging. Here you're not judging their heart, their inner intentions. Right? Here you're judging by what their actions are. So there are some times when people do things and it's just quite obvious that's a sin. Right? And I will say, I think there are some sins that are more harmful, practically speaking, to the congregation or the body than other ones. Okay? So, you know, if someone is stealing from the offering plate, that definitely affects the congregation way more than if they were, you know, caught saying a cuss word out in the parking lot. I mean, if the second one is true, then we probably have to ban everybody in here. Especially me. So, we do have to judge sometimes. And don't go around getting your, you know, binoculars out and peering into people's lives and trying to find things. I'm not talking because we got this one here, right? It's only when something becomes unignorable anymore, right? It's gotten too big to be ignored, to be passed over, to be merciful towards. So, all right. I think that's it. When I do see those comments in sections, you know, when stories break like that, and it's like, oh, you know, put him in a little rehab thing, and 3 months he'll be back, or, you know, no. Perhaps he should consider leaving the ministry altogether forever. Why is that one never an option? Why don't you just drop out and go get a job somewhere? Go work at Home Depot or something. Hand out food at Costco. I've thought about doing that one myself. They pay $15 an hour. So, yeah. Say what? Then what?
To teach on.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, sorry. Oh, I'm sure I could. Yeah. Yeah. That's what this one is. Right? Hey, look. Anything anybody's done, you can do. In some shape or form, right? Anything. That's right after the Lord's Prayer. Matthew 5:6-9, yeah. Yeah, well, it's right after, you know, after the, how's the Lord's Prayer go? Yeah, so when it says, deliver us from evil, right, that's usually where the Lord's Prayer stops, but right after that it says, if you don't forgive those who've sinned against you, then your Father in heaven will not forgive you. So God is slow to judge, very merciful, full of mercy. His mercies are new every morning. You know, how does it say it in Romans 6, I think? Just read it. No, I'm sorry, you were right, it's Romans 5. But where sin abounded, grace abounded much more. Right? No matter, grace is always going to outpace your sin. If you take advantage of it. If you are stiff-necked and refuse to confess and admit, etc., then it's still hovering over you. It's going to be trapped in there. It cannot escape. What's what we want? We need that relief valve to let that pressure out. Yeah.
And the power of
Correct. So.
We have that benefit daily.
Actually, the die daily, right?
The die daily. We often know the wedding sacrifice. So if you are in a perfect position, the wonderful counselor can be the one who's working on this clay that we have that we can't do apart from them. The blessing will come upon us. It's not a burden. It's an awesome, awesome blessing to come upon us.
Right. So what is dying daily? It seems like most of the time, for most of us, dying daily is having a sin revealed to us that we then confess wholeheartedly to God. And that little bit of pride dies. That pride in us has to die on a daily basis. Every day we need to say, yeah, you're God, I'm not. I do not get to run my own life. I do not get to decide what's right and wrong for my own self or anyone else. Okay. Praise God. Monty, you're my closer.